So it's great to be here, but I should probably start with a bit of a word of warning, so I'm quite new to the area. So my own background is so far has been more in operator algebras, category theory, and quantum information theory. But yeah, I find that this is also really fascinating stuff, and it's been quite an intriguing to learn about this. But what I'm going to say is more of a status report than anything complete. And also, I don't want to make any claims at originality, simply because a lot of smart people have already been looking at these things, and I don't yet know what has been done, all of what has been done. And there's clearly a lot of overlap with things that people have already said. So this being said, let me give a brief overview about what I want to do. So I want to introduce, or at least sketch, the quantum double models, or Kitaev models, from the perspective of the graphical calculus, in particular, how we've heard about it yesterday. And this turns out to be slightly different than the ribbon graph and discrete gauge theory picture that we've heard about, and somehow less sophisticated. but let's see if there's any comments about this. I'd really be glad to hear about it. So then I want to talk about the graphical calculus of these finite dimensional semi-simple half algebras, because there's additional structure there. Which turns out to be closely related to things that we've been hearing about yesterday. And then I want to speculate a little about how this may relate to planar algebras and also to how one can potentially lift extended 2D TQFTs to three-dimensional ones. This somehow seems to be what's going on, but I don't know how to understand this topologically. And finally, I'll say a little bit about how one can, what we've done on trying to generalize the known relationships between the interplay between the antipode and Haar integrals in a Hopf algebra to Hopf monoids and Hopf monoid objects and other kinds of categories. All right, so recall that quantum double models are parameterized by at least in one version, by finite dimensional semi-simple Hopf algebra H. We need to have a suitably normalized Haar integral and Haar functional, and that comes from the semi-simplicity, right? So that guarantees that we have this two-sided Haar integral and Haar functional that we use in the definition of the Hamiltonian for the Kitaev model. Okay, so in a graphical calculus, it means that we have the following pieces of structure. So you should read these from top to bottom. And so the red ones are going to correspond to the sort of multiplication and unit. The green ones, co-multiplication and co-unit. And then we also have a Haar integral that I'm going to denote in green also, and the Haar functional. And just to indicate my normalization conditions conventions, I've written down here what these things are in the case of a group algebra. So you can think of this maybe in some sense as this kind of L2 normalized, like a normalized wave function. Okay, so then let's look at a Kitaev model. So this is defined on some kind of lattice or let's say a ribbon graph embedded in a surface. Graph embedded in a surface corresponds to a ribbon graph. So I want to think about it a little bit differently and probably somehow more naively as a pair of graphs corresponding to the vertex. So the vertices and the blockheads forming dual pairs of graphs. So the way to think about this is now that here are our actual qubit systems, which correspond to the edges of the original graph. And then the V's, sort of the vertices of the original graph, are the vertices of, let's say, the primal graph. And the black hats are the vertices of the Poincaré dual graph. And so the arrows just indicate the incidence relations between vertices and edges. And the direction of the arrows is also such that these are consistent with the dual. So if the blue ones go that way, then I make a quarter turn in the positive direction to get the direction of the brown arrows. Okay, so now we want to equip these sites with copies of the half algebra as a Hilbert space, and equip these with the corresponding vertex and black hat operators. So in the graph calculus, let's see what this kind of vertex operator, for example, looks like. We take the Haar integral, right, so the Haar element, we co-multiply it a bunch of times, so fourfold in this case. So I'm just, because of the co-associativity, I can just draw the fourfold co-multiplication as a single dot, of course. And then multiply with the corresponding thing that lives at the sites. So this is in the red multiplication. Okay, but I really want to draw this more as a lattice kind of picture in this two-dimensional way. So this is more like if you think of the way that I think about this, and probably some of you as well, is that this is really a slice of a three manifold, right? Because somehow in the end we want to have something like a 3D TQFT. And then this is in some sense an infinitesimal and a slice that is kind of small in the temporal direction. But now if I look at this from the top, it ends up looking more something like this. And now I have to put directions on the wires in order to remember which ones are inputs and which ones are outputs of the morphisms. Okay, so nothing really, I guess pretty simple so far. Okay, and now if I put these together, and so for the black hat operators, I mean, these are pretty much the same, except that with the opposite colors. So in that sense, it's perfectly symmetric, of course. And so then we need to compose these. So basically, I kind of think about this as these being stacked on top of one another. But because of the commutativity, it doesn't matter in which order we compose them. So in the end, the overall composite operator ends up looking something like this. So we have the site on which our qdot lives. That's basically corresponds to this ingoing wire. And then there, this entire composite, this entire diagram defines a composite operator, which acts on that wire. And so then this is the outgoing thing. Right? And so here I've just composed by matching up these wires. So now there's still one pair of wires that remains unmatched at each site, because overall we still won't have an operator. but now if I want to, so this is the projector onto the ground state space, right? And I can, here it looks like the arrows are just to indicate to remember which ones things are inputs and which ones are outputs. But now if I do this on a closed surface, then, I'm going to get closed cycles. So that means then I really need to interpret this in a compact closed category. And these really correspond to, bending the wires around and using the cups and caps and duals. Okay, and we can obtain the ground state space dimension by taking the trace of that projector, and that corresponds to also matching up these remaining unmatched pairs of wires. And so then this entire diagram evaluates to a scalar, and in this picture, maybe some of you can say more about this. In this picture, it looks kind of more like these Kuba-Burke invariants, which I don't actually understand at a technical level at this point, but maybe somebody can comment on this. Okay, and it looks like also I seem to have used more like this picture of dual graphs as opposed to the ribbon graph structure. Okay, so this is really all that I have to say about the Kataev model. But now I want to get a little bit more into these finite dimensional semisimple Hopf algebras. So, I forgot to mention that this picture is also very similar to what Andreas had showed us on Monday, I think. But it's not so clear how it exactly relates. But yeah, I can say more about that if anyone wants. Okay. So, but what actually is the graphical calculus of finite dimensional semisimple Hopf algebras? So there's somehow a lot more structure than just in a Hopf algebra, because we have the Haar integral and the Haar functional, and these define a lot of additional things. And so I want to axiomatize this directly. Most of you probably know that when you have a finite dimensional semisimple Hopf algebra, that it also automatically becomes a symmetric Frobenius algebra. If you simply take the Haar functional and stick in a product, then that defines a bilinear form on your algebra. And that bilinear form automatically turns out to be symmetric. And you can do the same thing with the Haar integral. If you stick it into the co-multiplication, you get an element of the tensor product. And that's the corresponding dual to the bilinear form, except that, you get the antipode when you try to match those up. This is in the zigzag equation. But in any case, so this is a witness for this bilinear form being non-degenerate. Okay, and so if we use this, and so now I'm using this cap as a shorthand notation for this thing composed of the antipode on either side. Well, this doesn't matter on which side I put the antipode. And so now this way I get a co-multiplication. This turns out to, form a co-monoid and satisfy the Frobenius law, but this is basically just the usual correspondence between the algebraized notion of a Frobenius algebra, where you just have an algebra equipped with the suitably compatible non-degenerate bilinear form, and a category theorist notion of Frobenius algebra in terms of co-multiplication and the Frobenius law and that stuff. Okay. So every finite dimensional semisimple Hopf algebra is also a symmetric Frobenius algebra. But it's actually not just any symmetric Frobenius algebra, but it's a little bit of extra properties. Namely, if we choose the normalization of this Haar functional suitably, then we can achieve that it's also what's called quasi-special and quasi-extra special. I'm not quite sure where the term comes from. Is that maybe invented by, at least it's in Ross's paper on interacting Frobenius algebras?
Special, I think, was invented by.
Okay. Yeah.
The term extra special, I think, was coined by myself and John Bias.
Oh, okay. Oh, thanks. Yeah. Good. So, to get an axiomatization or a graphical calculus that is somehow maximally symmetric, it looks like we really should be taking this red co-multiplication, which we get. Which is derived from the Haar integral and Haar functional structure, and the corresponding green thing, which is a new red green multiplication, that we can try. We should try to axiomatize these, or consider these as part of the actual axiomatization in order to get a nicely symmetric structure. Okay, so then these would be the either the generators of a prop, if you were in yesterday's talk by Ross and Powell, or you can say that if we want to have a finite dimensional semi-simple half algebra, you need, or at least you're going to have, these pieces of structure. Okay, so then we have a bunch of relations or a bunch of equations satisfied by these things. So certainly, well, we have, of course, the monoid and co-monoid equations, the Frobenius law, and now this specialty and quasi-specialty. Actually, I think there should be a plus here. This is, sorry about this. yeah, likewise for the green, so these are Frobenius algebras, and now these are required to interact in a certain way, that forming a Hopf algebra. So here, one thing that I find quite nice is that if you take the multiplicativity of the co-unit, that graphically, it looks pretty much the same as the defining property of the Haar, of a Haar integral, except that of kind of the wire spent around. And I guess this, again, relates back to Andreas's talk on Monday, that in some sense you're free to bend the wires around, and the direction, the distinction between input and output doesn't really matter that much. And likewise here for co-multiplicativity of the unit and the defining property of a Haar functional. Okay, and because now we have, well, actually four of these multiplication, co-multiplication, we have not just a pair of Frobenius algebras, but we also have a pair of Hopf algebras. Let's just swap all the colors again, and so this turns out to be, I think you can identify it with either the opposite of the dual Hopf algebra or with the co-opposite. And if you use, we have the cups and caps available that identify the Hopf algebra with its dual. And depending on which ones you use, you can either use the red ones or the green ones, you get an isomorphism between H and H star. And depending on which one you use, that will identify this other Hopf algebra structure with either the opposite or the co-opposite of the dual. Okay, so this second Hopf algebra structure by the Frobenius, because everything is kind of automatically self-dual, would have been enough to impose this for one pair of colors. there's more redundancy here, really. I mean, this was a lot of equations. I'm not quite sure at the moment how much redundancy there is, but certainly also the antipode is redundant. And so this is something that was also mentioned yesterday in a slightly different context, but it's essentially the same. So yeah, all of this is intimately related to what we've heard about yesterday, these interacting Hopf algebras that Powell was speaking about, and the interacting Frobenius algebras that Ross, I think, mentioned. Except that we want to do here is really stronger in the sense that we make weaker assumptions. We don't want the Frobenius structures or any of the multiplications and co-multiplications to be commutative or co-commutative, which is something that Pavel and Ross have assumed also for good reason, of course, but for the purpose of this application, we don't want to do that. So yeah, I'm not sure at the moment what a minimal set of relations actually is. But still, there should be some kind of equivalence, and it's not worked out in all details yet, between models of this graphical calculus, and also the first two are clear, that when you have a finite dimensional semi-simple half algebra, you get a model of the graphical calculus in a unique way. The normalizations for the Haar integral and the Haar functional are fixed. conversely, when you have such a model, obviously it forms a finite dimensional semi-simple half algebra. But one can also try to understand this as a pair of these quasi-special, quasi-extra-special symmetric Frobenius algebras, which interact via the bi-algebra law, and then this Haar properties, and then the antipode is derived like here. Okay, I'm not quite sure, and I'd like to understand better to what extent these Haar properties are really needed, because when naively one wouldn't, if one just writes down, an interacting pair of Frobenius algebras interacting via the bi-algebra law and bi-algebra things, then this wouldn't be there, and this wouldn't be there. Okay, there's just a number of comments about this. So models, if you have a model of this graphical calculus, meaning an interpretation in the category of complex vector spaces, these are very rigid. So there's an obvious notion of morphism between these. And it's just an inner map that preserves, that commutes with all the structure. When you have two such models, take a map that preserves all the structure, that's a morphism. And so morphism of these are very rigid. They're all isomorphisms, which is not so hard to see if you think that if you notice that they have to be half algebra homomorphisms, and they also have to preserve the Haar integral and the Haar functional, well, then you can't really do very much. From a slightly different perspective, this is because this prop is a compact closed category, and so a model is a functor into the category of vector spaces. When you have two such models, you have two such functors, and a morphism between models is a natural transformation between these, but now a natural transformation between strong monoidal functors between compact closed categories is automatically an isomorphism. So this is sort of the abstract reason for how this comes up. And I feel like it must somehow be related to the same phenomenon at a TQFT level, that, a TQFT is a strong monoidal functor, or higher functor, if you want. And every morphism between these is an isomorphism for the same reason of compactness. And I feel like these two must somehow be related. Maybe somebody can say more about this. Okay, another observation is that so every half algebra has a one parameter group of kind of rescalings, and these are also called trivial deformations. So you can just rescale the multiplication, the unit, the co-unit, and the co-multiplication by a suitable scalar. So for two of them, use a scalar. For two of them, use the inverse, or the reciprocal scalar. Then there's the same thing still works here, but there's no additional degrees of freedom because the Haar, we fixed the specialty, and the quasi-specialty basically fixes the normalization. So that's also why the quasi-specialty and extra quasi-specialty are kind of useful to have around. Okay, there also seem to be some, nice symmetries of this graphical calculus or of this prop. You can, again, as usual, take opposites or take co-opposites, but now it just has this additional symmetry that you can flip the colors. Okay, now there's, let me get to the part that is more speculation, but I think I'm pretty sure some of you already understand this, so I'd like to hear about it. So every semi-simple Hopf algebra also defines a planar algebra, which means that you can form, basically stick things, somehow stick these diagrams together, and you can stick them inside holes of a disk like this, where the holes are themselves interior disks in the interior, and then you can evaluate the whole thing again to another diagram. So this is what's called, one of these operations in this opera that describes planar algebras. and somehow It's more of an intuition, really, but it kind of, given that I think planar algebra also came out yesterday, so I feel like our graphical calculus should somehow be related, but I don't exactly know how. So the shadings seem a little bit like they might correspond to the two colors. But yeah, I don't know. If you use a slightly different operator for this, so namely without the shadings, but you also allow these strings to cross, then it seems that Stefano and I figured out that the resulting algebras are a kind of, turn out to be exactly compact closed categories with a certain kind of self-dual objects, where the objects are self-dual in a specified way. And so it seems to be something like the same as for our graphical calculus, but now we have two colors, and so that's kind of why I think they may be related to these shadings. Okay. Oh, and also, which planar algebra? So assuming that this somehow makes sense, which I don't know, but then the next question would be, well, which planar algebras actually arise from finite dimensional semi-simple algebras? I'm not sure if how much is already known about this. Okay, now let me get to another kind of wild speculation. As I was saying, we were talking about pairs of interacting, or an interacting pair of symmetric Frobenius algebras. But now we know that these symmetric, well, separable symmetric Frobenius algebras are really the same thing as extended 2D TQFTs, right? So this is in the thesis of Christian Maupris. If we assume, I think that's it's true that this is now a technical thing that so far I'm not really fully understanding, that the separability condition here is, I think, equivalent to the Frobenius algebra being special. And now if you just renormalize suitably, it becomes quasi-special, satisfies the earlier normalization condition. So that means that the two Frobenius algebras that come up in this graphical calculus, they're really a pair of extended 2D TQFTs. And I find this quite intriguing because somehow this suggests that the quantum double models are correspondingly, I think, roughly equivalently, right, the 2RF0 TQFTs construction. You take a pair of these, you take a pair of suitably compatible extended 2D TQFT, and that somehow produces a 3D, and presumably also extend a 3D TQFT for you. If somebody can shed some light on how that works topologically, it would be great to hear. So how do you do this directly? I mean, this seems to be saying there's kind of an indirect way to do that. You take this pair of 2D TQFTs, you compute the underlying symmetric Frobenius algebras, and then you got a finite dimensional semi-simple Hopf algebra, and that defines the corresponding 2RF0 TQFT. But I feel like there should be a more direct way to do that just purely topologically. You take your manifold and somehow slice it up in some way. And this may have to do with these Poincaré dual graphs that I was mentioning earlier. So suppose you have your two 2D TQFTs, and you want to define you want to turn it into a turn this data into a three-dimensional TQFT. So that means you have to start with a surface and assign to it a state space. So now we can maybe try to, well, put a graph on the surface, and we got this dual pair of graphs that I had at the beginning. And now we can try to evaluate the original TQFTs, 2D TQFTs, on these graphs. So this is kind of a question that I have. Is it actually possible? Does it make sense to evaluate a 2D TQFT not just on von manifolds, but also on graphs which are kind of von manifolds with singularities? And what I imagine is that you kind of define this via some kind of colimit or something as the state spaces of the individual edges, and then you kind of match those up and define it on the graph in some kind of colimit. yeah, but as also this is something I'd be glad to hear about. Okay, so much for the speculation. Now let me get to something that we've actually done, which again is probably not original. So it would be nice to also understand models of the graphical calculus, not just in vector spaces, but also in other kinds of categories. For example, maybe you want to consider a Hopf algebra in a spherical fusion category or something, which may be a natural thing to do. It may be good to understand these models in other kinds of categories. And for that, it seems necessary to understand this interplay between the Haar integrals and the antipode in somewhat greater generality. One of the things that we've shown was that if you have a bimonoid and an arbitrary symmetric monoidal category, so it means you only have the multiplication or corresponding unit. Oh, yeah, so I haven't written down the monoid and comonoid equations, but yeah, I mean, you all know these. So this is only the bimonoid, the interaction between the two. So then the statement is that if the bimonoid has a non-singular left Haar integral, then it also has an antipode, so then it actually is a Hopf monoid. Yeah?
What happens when you plug the unit into the
Yeah, that I should have written that down. Yes, sorry. Yeah, I forgot that additional equation here. Yes. That the unit plugged into the co-unit should be, well, one scalar. thanks. okay, so this is something which is very similar to results along these lines in a paper of Kupferberg, as we've discovered afterwards. But so far, we haven't done a precise comparison. Also, Kupferberg seems to have kind of more elegant proofs. Make this a little bit more explicit, I should say what I actually mean by a non-singular left Haar integral in an arbitrary symmetric monoidal category. Left Haar integral is just defined by the same property, which translates into this kind of diagram. It's non-singular if there is a corresponding, if it is sort of non-degenerate in the way that a bilinear form is non-degenerate, which means that there is a corresponding cup that satisfies then this zigzag equation here. So now how do we prove that? So how do we construct the antipode? How do we show that it's an antipode? And this is just now a bunch of graphical manipulations. But pretty much as in similar way as I was showing earlier, you can construct it by sort of taking the Haar integral and the co-multiplication here. And now I really would like to take the multiplication and the Haar functional here, but at this point we don't have a Haar functional around. So I just have to construct something that looks like a Haar functional. And so I can take this thing. With this definition, it turns out it works, and I can do this short computation. The most important step is this one, where I use the property of the Haar integral that this decomposes the thing. And this is really a translation of a condensed version of the original proof in the paper of Larsen and Sweetler. It was quite a bit of work to translate that because they develop a kind of lot more sophisticated machinery, if you want. So this is really the essence of the argument. And there's a number of other things that one can do along similar lines. So this shows that it's a left antipode, and well, of course, in the same way, you can construct a right antipode by just doing everything as a mirror image, but then because when you have a left and a right antipode, the two must coincide, and so you have an antipode. Okay, so this did not use any sort of compactness or duals in any sense. So now suppose the if we assume that we have duals, or actually something slightly weaker, it's enough to assume that our symmetric monoidal category is traced. So you can form, take traces of morphisms like I've been indicating here. And if you assume that a trace of the square of the antipode is invertible, then conversely, we can go the other way and construct a non-singular left Haar integral, and the antipode turns out to be invertible. Again, this is, I guess, pretty much the standard thing, maybe in a slightly more general setting. And if you've seen this sort of thing, then you'll know that the Haar integral is constructed in terms of the square of the antipode acting in the regular co-representation. And this is just a graphical representation of that. and now, yeah, there's some kind of computation to show that this actually is a Haar integral. And for invertibility of the antipode, and to show that this Haar integral is also non-singular, we can introduce a cap and a corresponding cup like this, and then another kind of similar calculation shows that you actually get the that these are dual when you also put in the antipode, so you get the identity plus this additional scalar. And so when this scalar is invertible, that shows that here, together with the inverse of that scalar and this thing, then this thing is an inverse for the antipode. So I think that's actually all that I have to say. As I've said at the beginning, I think this is really not much, there's not really much original stuff here, but again, it's fascinating stuff, and so I'm still learning and hoping for feedback. Thanks.
So just to get straight, at the very beginning, your assumptions are just that you have a Hopf algebra and chosen normalization.
You have a Hopf algebra with a two-sided Haar integral and then Haar functional, with which you can then normalize. Or equivalently, you have just a Haar integral that is non-zero on the co-unit. Then that also implies semi-simplicity. But yeah, to begin with, it's only the Haar integral and the Haar functional.
And can you choose the normalization to make the Frobenius algebras special as opposed to quasi-special?
But I think you can't get rid entirely of some of these square roots of the dimension coming up.
Right.
So you have them then in the bi-algebra law, right? You have the scaled bi-algebra law. And if you just do the calculation or see what this means in a group algebra case, there's always going to be, so that's at least what I've done for myself to see how should one choose these normalizations, so how should one do it in group algebra case, and then you can't entirely get rid of them. Maybe there's some deeper meaning to that, but I don't know.
The representation of the Grünfeld bubble appears as
in here.
The representation appears here. I mean, like in the visual Kitaev model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In exactly the same way. How it goes. I mean, because now all this is inside of a category. It's not, they are not vector spaces. No? Or I'm confused.
You can interpret this in any complex closed category. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a good question. How does it relate to? Yeah, I don't know.
Not a question, but just two small historical remarks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Graphical calculus for Hopf entrepreneurs has been used by various people, of course.
Sure, sure. So, yes,
so,
yes.
So the oldest one I know is Majid in 95.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. And in Majid's papers, maybe one can find some information which could be of interest to you.
Okay, okay.
Even though he typically is interested in the break.
Yes, yes. I think also the Australian category theory school who developed a graphical calculus for, I mean, originally, graphical calculus for monodal categories in general. I've seen them talking a lot about.
Specifically for Hopf.
Okay, uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, okay.
The second is concerning specialness.
Yeah.
I learned about the concept from Michael Möbe in 2000, so it's at least that old.
Well, special is due to Frank Quinn also, and it's 1990.
Okay.
Due to whom?
Frank Quinn.
Okay, uh-huh. Yeah.
At least that's where I saw it.
Yes, okay, thanks.
It also appeared in early papers by Cavani and Waters, and they're called several.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. From the 80s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just meant the term, not the
the recordings, the videos are up on the website now, so you can look at the day before video. And then also the slides are also up. So there's a link, if you look carefully, there's the PDF, I think, or something like that. And then it will start with an abstract, and all the slides are there. So for your discussions, it might be helpful too. And then I think you also have something to make, an announcement to make about this Friday's discussion, chair discussions.
Yeah, just a short remark, which is that okay, so we're supposed to have a structured discussion on Friday, Bianca and I are meant to be, to some extent, in charge of this, but we'd like to have some input from everyone that would take part in this discussion as to what we would actually like to discuss. So it's not like we're going to set up miniature talks for everybody, but if we at least had some input from you about what you think are interesting open problems or what directions you would like to pursue in the future, and especially if those connect to what other people here have been talking about, especially in other fields, so that there's kind of a sort of set of things that we can throw on the board and ask people to give comments on, that would be great. So if you can just give us some input, maybe over lunch, or send something to our email addresses. Our email address would be this. That would be great. We'll also try and search some people and actually put pressure on you to give us something. But if things come out voluntarily, that's always better. Thanks very much.
Any questions?